Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars
at Knowles.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Wednesday, and it's my pleasure to be with you. President Donald Trump has thrown down a challenge to schools in the Pacific Northwest, and one in particular. And what is that challenge about? It's about allowing biological males to replace females in women's sports or girls' sports. And when you say, well, Lars, they're not replacing all of them. No, they're just allowing biological males who imagine that they are female to go out on the track and field, say track, and beat his competition by as much as 10 seconds. Now, I don't follow high school sports that closely, but I understand that when you're talking about track and field, beating your competition is usually something that's done in fractions of a second. When you can beat your competition by 10 seconds, it suggests that you have an unnatural advantage over that person. And yet, in this case, we started reporting on this last week after we found out that Aidan Gallagher, the person in question, who's not being named by many in the press because they say, well, the person is underage. Well, you're not reporting on crime. You're reporting on high school track and field. If you're running on the track and you beat somebody, are you telling me that the news organizations don't cover high school sports, don't name the student athletes? Well, I guess a different set of rules applies when it comes to boys running as girls against girls and beating them soundly. Donald Trump has thrown down the challenge. The U.S. Department of Education has opened an investigation, in this case, into Portland Public Schools and the Oregon School Activities Association, that is the accreditation agency for high school sports, because a transgender student athlete was allowed to compete in the interscholastic girls track and field competition last week and won tremendously. The problem is he won with a natural biological advantage because he's a boy running against girls. And now we're going to see what happens. Whether or not the schools who have been told don't do this, and they've been told that by the Department of Education, if they decide, well, we're going to do it anyway, they stand to lose a lot of money. Because still, the Department of Education, which is rapidly being put out of business by President Trump, and it couldn't come soon enough, they hand out lots and lots of money to schools all over America. And you never heard the liberals object, because Oregon and Washington are mostly run by liberal politicians, members of the Democrat Party. You never heard them object when Washington, D.C. said, you will teach DEI, you will honor transgender and all the rest of that nonsense. But now that a new president has been chosen with a mandate from the people to bring about change, and he said, this is going to change. You're going to stop making girls compete against biological males. It doesn't make any sense. Now, all of a sudden, I imagine they'll go right into court and say, well, you have to let us do this. No, they don't. And in fact, the federal government, if they hand out money, well, they can also stop handing out the money. Anyway, we'll get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to a Wednesday on the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our X poll today, and this has to do with another decision by the administration. The president has now moved to freeze tens of millions of dollars that is going to organizations like Planned Parenthood. Now, I think you already know my position on this, but the way we framed the question, should President Trump freeze all federal funds to America's largest provider of abortions, Planned Parenthood? I would answer that with a solid yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, yesterday's X poll went this way. Should Trump fire officials who leaked military plans in a group chat that included a journalist? I said no to that idea. I think Trump has a good team. I think a major mistake was made by including a very liberal journalist named Jeffrey Goldberg, who's the national editor for Atlantic Magazine. He has been the source of what I consider some fraudulent stories in the past, but in this case, it sounds as though he was accidentally included in a group chat on an app called Signal that you can use on your smartphone to be able to communicate to other people. We don't know who added that. Mike Walls, the National Security Advisor, has actually taken responsibility for it. For all we know, it could have been a member of his staff, but if he's a good boss, Mike Walls is simply saying, I made the mistake, I'll take responsibility. Then the question comes, does Donald Trump plan to fire him? And the president has already indicated he will not fire him. But the results on yesterday's X poll, I said no, 43% of you agreed, 57% of you said somebody ought to get fired for what happened because of that mistake. And it was a mistake. Not something that was done consciously. So in that case, if you start firing everybody who makes mistakes, well, there were a lot of mistakes made during the Biden administration and people did not routinely get fired. But I want to get back to this issue of girls and boys competing against girls as girls because of this transgender nonsense. Now, I understand that a lot of you have said, well, the girls should just refuse to participate. I don't think we should put that on kids. I don't think we should say to kids, adults decided that they wanted to run some kind of weird social experiment by allowing boys to pretend that they're girls, compete against the girls, beat them in athletic competition like Leah Thomas in swimming and so many other examples from the last several years. But as Willamette Week reported over the weekend, McDaniel High School student athlete, and they didn't name him, but I'm going to, Aiden Gallagher, was subject to a slew of right-wing media coverage, I guess that would include me, after winning in the 200 and 400-meter races at a track meet on March the 19th, 17 days ago. And I said that was unfair. She won the 200 meters by a full 1.5 seconds and won the 400 meter competition by 10 seconds, which is absolutely unbelievable. As the Oregonian reported, the fish wrapper, the athlete won the Class 6A championship in the 200 and came in second in the 400 last year. She, as the Oregonian, the fish wrapper calls him, was subject to similar attacks back then. I think this is absolutely wrong. And I pointed out to you before, if you say, well, are you saying women are less than men? No. But I am saying that when it comes to certain athletic competitions, I'd point out to you, Roger Bannister, a man, set the 4-minute mile mark back in 1951. Women have come as close as 4 minutes and 7 seconds. Men these days in track and field routinely run the mile in well under 4 minutes, about 3 minutes and 50 some seconds. So in that case, if you understand that men set certain track meet records a long time ago and women have not come close, is it fair to tell high school girls that they have to compete against boys? And do you want the president to tell those schools that won't go along with the program that you're not getting federal funds? Because I wanted to cut them off. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Cause For many of us, it's happening. Your hair is thinning out, your crown's disappearing, and maybe hair loss has you feeling you've lost your identity altogether. Hey, it's Lars. Well, I've got good news. It's an incredible yet simple one-day treatment that starts regrowing your own natural hair the very next day. And it's guaranteed to grow out for life. It's the Advanced FUE from Advanced Hair. We've all seen the pills and lotions. You know, the ones that come with monthly subscriptions? They help you retain what you have. But what if you want your own natural hair permanently and in specific areas? From Advanced Hair's state-of-the-art facilities to their world-class doctors, it's not maybe your hair will grow. It's guaranteed your new hair will grow. You decide how much, how thick, and where. Advanced Hair has changed tens of thousands of lives, and they're the team I personally recommend. For your free consultation, $250 off and 250 free hair grafts, call 503-832-HAIR. That's 503-832-HAIR or advancedhair.com.
Naysayers go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead, fish wrapper, or mainstream media bias.
Northwest state officials should actually welcome President Trump's new action to keep non-citizens out of our elections. After all, it was less than a year ago that Oregon only accidentally found out that more than 1,600 foreign citizens, some of them illegal aliens, had registered to vote in the state of Oregon. Our Constitution puts most election matters in the hands of states where it really ought to be. But when it comes to federal elections, our national government calls the shots. That in federal elections, only ballots received by the end of Election Day ought to be counted. Late yesterday, President Trump signed an executive order that directs a host of federal agencies to help states clear illegal voters off their rolls if they're willing to do it. And in the case of Oregon and Washington, I don't think they are willing to do it, strangely, and the public ought to be asking why. The order also says in federal elections, only count the ballots that come in by the end of Election Day. To register, you'll now need to provide proof of citizenship. Homeland Security and even Social Security will use their various databases to identify who's legal and who's not. President Trump has even ordered the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, to prosecute illegal voters. Now, Northwest states have some choices to make. They can clean up their voter rolls or stand to lose millions of dollars in Election Assistance Commission money. I've learned over the years that governments, especially those led by liberals, talk a very brave game about things like sanctuary state and sanctuary city nonsense. That is, until you threaten their cash, and then they crash faster than a DEI-designed jet. Our question of the day, and you can send more to talk at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and you get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Forest Cat writes in from Whatcom County. Hey, Lars, not only will the new rental unit requirement for air conditioners in all bedrooms pinch landlord margins and put upward pressure on rents, but the higher summer utility bills, those are going to strain the personal budgets of lower-income tenants. Tolerating our few hot days without an unnecessary air conditioner leads to lower summer electric bills that allow lower-income residents to recover from the past winter's big bills. If landlords install mandated unnecessary air conditioners, tenants will run them every time the heat becomes a little bit uncomfortable, but those tenants will soon regret that. The suddenly much bigger summer electric bills, signed Forest Cat in Whatcom County. My favorite post on X today, and it shows a picture of a flag, an American flag, and also one of those trans flags flying outside of a school. And the comment was, imagine dropping off your young child at an elementary school and there's a trans flag prominently displayed right out front. It's a sign to warn normal parents, don't send your kids here. That school ought to be investigated. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous. ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Ono award the Daily Grill to all the public officials who immediately reacted to Donald Trump's order, clean up your voter rolls, instead of saying, hey, that's a darn good idea. We'd like to make sure that all the people who should be registered to vote are registered to vote, and all the people who have no business being registered to vote, non-citizens, are out of our rolls. Instead of embracing it, what did they say? They immediately reacted by saying, we're going to take this matter to court. Now imagine these nitwits from Oregon or Washington walking in effectively in front of a judge and saying, no, no, Your Honor, you do not need to be a citizen to vote in Northwest elections. Now, if that makes any sense to you, I'll be glad to take the naysayer call at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our best email of the day so far, but you can send more, is brought to you by Mod Pods, a better alternative to tiny homes. They're customized living solutions in your own backyard without the customized cost. Online, getmodpod.com. Rod Strand writes, and Lars, for those literally screaming about federal workers being pushed out into the cold without money to pay their mortgages or daycare, take note that we no longer have the same number of people in Hanford, Washington, working to create an atomic bomb, and that there are literally hundreds of federal agencies that have been renamed, reorganized, or abolished over the years. RIF, which is reduction in force, is as common in federal service as it is, for instance, at Intel, when revenue projections cause massive layoffs. As a side note, in a RIF reorganization, even though it's usually last in, first out, federal managers can determine who is essential to the new structure and who gets kicked out. The president appoints agency heads. To say he can't fire federal employees is one more abysmally stupid propaganda gambit. Signed, Rod Strand. To your calls now. It's a Wednesday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, where we endeavor to serve the needs of the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. David is a naysayer. And David, we love naysayers. Thanks for calling. What do you and I disagree about that makes you one?
Well, I think that Walz should be fired because, in the first place, it doesn't matter if there was classified information or not. You don't use your public phone for that kind of information, and you do not use an app that was provided by your phone. And the CIA has already said that app can be compromised.
That is true.
So he should be fired.
Okay.
He's the one that set it up.
Fair enough. And that's a worthy point. And in fact, you might wonder, David, if I said to you, David, send me a message on Signal. I happen to have the app on my phone. I don't use it very much, but I've loaded it at some point in the past. Could you send me a message on Signal?
I don't have it on my phone.
No, but if you had it on your phone, you know what else you'd need? You'd need what's called my Signal handle. You'd have to know the address, in effect, to send me a message. Now, I would ask the question, why did the National Security Advisor, Mike Walz, have Jeffrey Goldberg's Signal app address programmed into his phone? That's the only way it gets in there.
I don't know, but more importantly, they should not use that app for that reason.
And you made that point, but we agree on that. So,
wait a minute. I spent 20 years in the Navy. I have had top secret clearances with SI information clearances, and I've worked in SCIFs, and that's where you do that kind of information.
Okay, you made that point, but what do we disagree about then?
He should be fired.
Okay, very good. David, thank you very much. I gave him three chances to say it. Derek, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks, Lars. Longtime listener, way back when you used to go up to Mount Hood and do your shows.
Thank you.
If this was classified information, why is a reporter putting it out there as general knowledge then? Why
because
is he getting busted for that?
Because it's, I mean, even the president has said it's not classified info. It was info that apparently our allies already had. It was about events that were going to happen about 2 hours after they had that group chat, when they were apparently telling the group, this is what we're going to do. These are the weapons we're going to use. And was it a stupid thing to include Jeffrey Goldberg in that? Absolutely, it was a stupid thing to do. So, you know, why was that classified info, though? We've already had every member of the Trump administration say there was nothing classified in there. There were no war plans in there. There were details of the retaliation against the terrorists.
The Lars Larson Show.
VA.org.
Exercising the right to free speech every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Why is building brand new and too big high schools seem to be a priority here in the Pacific Northwest, while actually making the schools that might fall down and crush kids during an earthquake not a top priority? Well, the guy we've got to got to talk to about that is Aaron Mesh, who is the managing editor at Willamette Week. In a lot of ways, Willamette Week, in my way of thinking, has become kind of a mini doge for the Pacific Northwest, running around and finding massive overspending and massive crazy spending by government agencies. So, Aaron, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm pretty sure that we would lose most of our readership if we were started referring to ourselves as the Pacific Northwest mini doge. But, you know, who needs readers?
I wasn't trying to cost you readers, but I really think you've done a good job. I mean, the stories that have been done already by many of your reporters, the people who answer to you and let you edit their copy, stories about schools that really need to be 1,000 students, and then they're built at 1,700 students for no particular reason. But this story most recently, and I read through it this morning, about the fact that there are apparently quite a number of elementary schools that are made out of unreinforced masonry, which generally means bricks, and that they know that when and if the Pacific Northwest gets hit by the inevitable big one, the earthquake, that those bricks are going to fall down, and if school is in session, the children are going to be hurt or killed. Why isn't that a top priority when they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars building fancy new high schools that are too big?
Well, I'll tell you, I find it puzzling also, and the answers that we've received to that question have not been satisfying. The short answer that I can give is that the bond is focused on rebuilding a couple of high schools that have strong parent support for rebuilding those high schools. And that there isn't a parent outcry regarding the elementary schools that are definitely going to collapse in a major earthquake. Now, why isn't there parent outcry about that? It could be that many parents aren't really familiar with the reality of the earthquake. It could be that they're in denial. It could be that the thing that's in front of your face, which is a classroom that it has poor HVAC, is something that's more upsetting than a thing that could happen someday but might not happen while your kid is still in school. So it's a variety of reasons, and there's other reasons why it is that the district might not be prioritizing this in its bond.
I mean, is it possible? I mean, I think the squeaky wheel argument makes a lot of sense, but I guess I'd also suggest that I would imagine that at some point we're going to see school officials and state officials and other local officials hold a press conference in front of a brand new 1,700 student high school that we don't need, where we need about half that capacity, because they like holding press conferences and they like bragging about how we brought you a brand new high school. That's a big deal. On the other hand, standing in front of an old brick building saying, hey, we reinforced this. You can't actually see it, but it might do us some good someday, is not nearly as exciting for the politicians behind it.
Sure. I think there's a certain amount of shiny object problem here, right? I also think that, and here this is a little bit more complicated, but I think it's worth unpacking. I think the reality is that, as we've discussed last week on this show, that the district is shrinking. There are less and less parents willing to send their kids to Portland public schools. That reality doesn't seem to be turning around anytime soon.
Yep.
And so I think the district knows that that's the case, and knows that that at some point fairly soon it will need to begin closing elementary schools. The first elementary schools that would make sense to close are in fact the ones that are unreinforced masonry buildings or unlike badly supported brick buildings. So I think there's a degree to which the district is actually contemplating closing these schools, but doesn't want to talk about that until the bond is passed. In other words, nothing riles up parents more than the knowledge that their kid's school is going to be closed. So there are a couple of hard conversations the district needs to be having. One is about closing elementary schools, and another is about closing a high school. And going into this bond cycle, it appears to me that the district is trying to, as hard as it can, to avoid having those conversations before people head to the ballot box.
I mean, even though it would make sense, and let me ask you this, Aaron, the last time I checked, Portland Public Schools, the majority of their schools are about two-thirds occupied. Seattle has the same kind of problem. And you'd say, well, if we're only occupying two-thirds of the school, why don't we take three schools and put the kids from three schools into two? Even I can do that kind of math. And then if one of those two that you're putting them in is the kind that needs to be reinforced, then do the reinforcement work on it. You have to spend less money, you get more good, and you start saving the money right now. But you're telling me that they're the political cowardice rules that they're going to say we don't have to start closing them yet, so we're just going to run a lot of empty space at extra cost that doesn't do a darn thing for kids' education.
Yeah, I mean, basically that is what I'm telling you. Yes, yeah, I am saying that people in public office do not like when their constituents, in this case, parents. And believe me, having written plenty of stories about schools over the years, there's nothing more frightening than a parent scorned who feels that their kid isn't getting a fair shake or isn't getting what the other kids get. And I think that the school board has tried to dodge that particular backlash by essentially promising everything to everyone going into the bond cycle and then having the ugly conversation after the bond is renewed about how we're going to have to shut some things down.
I mean, these people who ran for school board because they wanted to be making gigantic decisions on a district that costs two-thirds of $1 billion a year to run, they didn't hear, you know, the admonition, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. Why did they run for a decision-making position if they don't want to make decisions? Or did they think they were all going to be really easy decisions? Like, what color would you like the school to be painted this year?
Well, that's a rhetorical question to which I don't really have the answer to why school board members run for office. I don't really know why anyone runs for office. It's something that I would rather undergo oral surgery than endure. So, but other people like it.
Is there any movement, perhaps, to say we're asking voters for $1.8 billion in May, and with it, we want to go out and modernize school facilities? And we promise that we're going to spend some of that, maybe some substantial amount of it, on reinforcing the schools so that if the earthquake arrives 10 minutes from now, that kids don't get crushed.
I think it would make a great deal of sense to have said more explicitly in this bond, here's how much is going to seismic, or at least here's a general outline of how much we think is going to go to seismic. The fact that they haven't made that case is very odd, frankly. It's not even that I'm like outraged so much as I'm just confused by why that wouldn't be something that they would put at front and center.
I think Emma Petit wrote this story, but she quotes one gentleman in there saying, well, yeah, when we're all done, we may have a little bit of money left over for that kind of stuff. I think money is fungible. I think they want the money not to be tied down to specific projects because that means they can spend it on just about anything they want. In other words, give us a blank check, let us spend it on whatever we want, and we don't want to tie it down to something that might literally save lives.
I wish that I could tell you that I think that that's like an anti-government rant, but I actually think it's basically correct, is that in this particular case, they have indeed tried to create as much fungibility as possible around what the money is going to be spent on in order to have flexibility after the fact.
Yeah, and now we're surprised that people who make decisions like that and have priorities like that can't manage to educate kids to where even half of them can read or do math at grade level. That's Aaron Mesh, managing editor at Willamette Week. You can find Emma Petit's story at WWeek.com. Coming up in a moment, I've actually got kind words for Governor Bob Ferguson for a change. He did something right, but most of it was just correcting something Jay Inslee did wrong. That's next.
Broadcasting the sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday live on the Radio Northwest Network. And this segment is brought to you by 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. I guess you ought to mark down this day because I don't have much good to say about Governor Bob Ferguson. But when Ferguson does something that's right, I'm happy to make to give him the credit for doing it. Now, I do have to point out the thing he did that is actually very common sense, but it's something that very much needed to be done, is simply correcting the horrendous error of his predecessor, Governor Jay Inslee, about which I don't think I even found a single day when I thought he was doing the right thing. But Bob Ferguson, now governor of Washington and former attorney general, yesterday afternoon, late in the day, we had mentioned the issue earlier in the day, but he canceled the planned release of a convicted triple murderer by the name of Timothy Pawley. Now, Governor Jay Inslee, on his last day in office in January, had ordered that Pawley be released from prison on parole. Prior to Ferguson's reversal, Pawley had been set to be let out tomorrow. He was going to walk out. He's a triple murderer. And by the way, in case you don't remember, this happened a long time ago, 45 years ago in 1980. This guy, Timothy Pawley, called Pawley, was convicted of walking into the Barn Door Tavern in SeaTac. And he murdered the night manager, the bartender, and Linda Buford, who is Pierre's girlfriend and a former waitress at the bar. Three people. Now, they were tied up inside of a cooler. In other words, he didn't shoot them because he thought he was trying to escape from his robbery. He shot them after they were already tied up and incapacitated. And the family members of Lauren Dowell and Robert Pierre and Linda Buford, who's Pierre's girlfriend and a former waitress, all of them shot to death at point-blank range by Timothy Pawley. And Jay Inslee was ready to let this guy simply walk out the door tomorrow. And so to his credit, Bob Ferguson has said, no, that's not going to happen. And he canceled the release of triple murderer Timothy Pawley. He deserves props and kudos at least for doing that. And then I want to mention this. This is crazy, but should one Northwest city make it illegal to discriminate against the homeless in jobs? Now, I don't know about you, but I would like to see the homeless get jobs. I'd like to see every person who is currently living on the streets go out and find gainful employment and then pay their own way. I want them to get their own housing. I don't want the public to pay for it. I want them to buy their own food. I want them to be successful. But what the Spokane City Council is considering is a law that's going to make it harder for employers to discriminate against homeless job hunters. Now, I don't know if they're talking about something that actually exists or not, but maybe if you imagine that somebody who's living in a tent by the side of the road or down by the river, wherever they happen to be, in the case of Puget Sound, down by Puget Sound, that they want to have an anti-discrimination law that says that if a person walks in to get a job, that the employer will not be able to ask about somebody's housing status unless it is relevant to their ability to carry out the duties of the job. Now, I think this is unnecessary, but it fits right in with what Spokane has been doing already. About 7 months ago, they passed a so-called homeless bill of rights. It was going to be part of it. They wanted to have this to say you can't discriminate against somebody who's trying to find a job. And then I would merely ask you, If somebody is living on the streets, in a cardboard box, in a tent, somewhere else, under a bridge somewhere, do you think that they're out there looking for jobs? They might be. And would I like to see them find a job? I would. But do I want to tell employers, you can't ask somebody, well, where do you live? And are you able to get to work on time? They introduced the ordinance on Monday of this week. It is currently expected to come up for a vote at some point next month. And what one of the councilmen says, Michael Cathcart, he says, I feel like this is kind of a real easy one and pretty low-hanging fruit. He said he had proposed similarly paring down the Homeless Bill of Rights. The original bill proposed by Councilwoman Lily Navarette last year would have made it illegal to use somebody's lack of a home to not only deny them employment, but also to rent to them or bar their access to public services like public transit. Although I can imagine the practical problems, if you say to somebody, if you go to work for me, how do I get a hold of you? Well, if they have a cell phone, you can still reach them in their tent. But if you say, where do you live? Well, I don't exactly live anywhere. I'm guessing that the vast majority of people in those circumstances are probably going to be applying for things like day labor jobs, where I don't think they care if you live in a tent or a camper or the back of your car. But is there actually any discrimination that's going on right now? Are people out there living on the streets and then trying to find a job and finding if they can't write down a physical address somewhere and tell an employer, I have permanent housing, is that something that's actually being used or is this a solution in search of a problem? In other words, they're trying to say, we want to make it illegal for people to do something that they are not doing right now. I think that Spokane and every city in the Northwest has far bigger problems to solve than whether or not homeless people are being discriminated against based on their lack of permanent housing when they're trying to find a job. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Naysayers always go first at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails in a moment. But this story really grabbed me when I got the email a few days ago. And the question comes down to this. What does a mother do when she realizes that her son is headed toward a life of drugs and violence and she can't get the police to lock him up? Jenna Brill joins me now. Jenna Brill is a listener, I take it, and she wrote me a note. And it was a long note. It was a very sober note. But it basically says, I can't figure out why the police will not incapacitate my son by locking him up. Ms. Brill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thanks for taking my interest in my email.
Well, absolutely, because I have a feeling there are an awful lot of parents out there who are in the same boat, either on drugs or on crime involving their kids, and they want the right thing done. And one of the things that impressed me was an awful lot of people will call the show and say, my son made a lot of mistakes. And I'll say, well, what crimes did he commit? You didn't make any bones about it, that your son has done some things that are wrong, that are violent, that are dangerous, and they
terrifying.
Put him, you were saying, go ahead, but I was just impressed by your candor.
Yeah, it's been really difficult to deal with coming from where he was to where he is now and not knowing what to do. I've reached out to the police and to the mental health crisis teams and to the military and so many people, and everybody just says, not my problem.
Now, should we say his name? I don't mind if you use a different name, but I hate just talking about him generically as he.
Go ahead.
What's his name?
His name is Robert.
Robert. So Robert was on the right track not so long ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, he graduated high school as a state-level track, did football, a state-level band member, played all the instruments. He got into the Army National Guard, went through OSET training for infantry, and got a scholarship to Southern Oregon University to learn. His goal was to be a band teacher in a small-town high school.
And what happened?
I don't know. He was here over summer and was getting ready for a month-long training with the Guard down in Louisiana, and hugs and kisses, love you, Mom, see you when I get back, and never showed up to training.
So he's AWOL as well, and you've pointed that out, except nobody, the National Guard hasn't given him notice that he's AWOL and hasn't taken any action?
Nothing. No, they've done nothing.
And you've reached out to them as well?
We've tried. We've gotten no response.
And then what happened after that? You said he committed armed robbery.
Yeah, in downtown Gresham in July, committed armed robbery at the Gresham Skate Park, was chased by the police and drones, and they blocked off part of the town, and they, you know, eventually caught him. Mind you, he's a very athletic young man, and kept him going for a few hours, and then the victims didn't want to participate, and they let him out the next morning.
And then he got arrested again last month?
Yeah, in February. I'm uncertain of what that was. I just seen his name listed in a report on the internet.
And that he may have been involved in human trafficking.
That was what the name was on the article. I'm not certain. I've been able to get no real answers on that other than his name was on that.
So he got given a court date, as you would be if you're charged with a crime, and he didn't show up. So what happened next?
So at that arrest, he was cited and released for a cite and release warrant for the previous escape and interfering with the peace officer from the initial previous arrest. And then he was released and then he was picked up again in March and released again.
And the police won't hold on to him?
The police are as kind of confused as I am. I think it's more the DA in Portland.
Even though there's a brand new DA and there should be new procedures in place, but you would think after that number of incidents that they'd say, we're going to hang on to you because otherwise you're going to run. I mean, if you don't show up for court, if you're not complying with the conditions of release, we can't trust you to show up.
That's what I would think. And then he could, you know, address what's going on and maybe get off the streets and be in a safer place.
And you said that some of the police involved in the initial armed robbery arrest actually are keeping you up to date on what's going on.
Yeah, there's one officer that's communicating with me, lets me know when he's been contacted by the police, and seems to genuinely care, but, you know, past arresting him, there's not much he can do. He even tried to reach out to the National Guard with me.
And because if the National Guard said you're AWOL, then he may have committed a crime. I mean, if he went AWOL in July, I would imagine by now they'd say, well, you know, we've got to take some kind of action on this, but you can't get anything done. And I suspect that there are a bunch of parents who are in your same boat. They love their kids. Their kids have the potential to be good again, perhaps. They need to see some consequences. And the system, for all the hundreds of millions of dollars that get poured into every part of the system, mental health, drug addiction treatment, arrest, prosecution, imprisonment, all that, and none of it is doing you any good.
None of it. And I've reached out to every place I can looking for help.
Now, do you have any idea? I mean, if you had, in your heart of hearts, what would you like to see happen? What should the system be doing for you?
Health evaluation.
Okay.
See what's going on, because the night and day difference from where he was to where he is doesn't add up to anybody. And, you know, make him accountable for what he's done and get the help he needs so that he doesn't continue down this path.
Because you suspect it could be drugs or it could be, say, schizophrenia. You suggested that. But at the very least, get him off the street.
Yeah, prevent him from being able to go further down this path and seriously hurt somebody else or himself.
Yeah, because it seems as though an awful lot of the system, Israel, seems aimed at, we're going to let you keep doing bad things until you go to the ultimate bad. You really go out, you murder somebody, you send somebody to the hospital, and then we'll do something about it. But that doesn't address the needs of either the person who is the budding criminal, nor does it address the public safety desires of the public.
Well, I absolutely feel like what you're saying is right. You know, if they would have gotten off the street the first time with the armed robbery and, you know, got him in wherever he needed to be for that crime and got him mental health services and different aspects, got him away from maybe the people that he's with engaging in these activities, maybe that would have been the end of it. He could have, you know, straightened up his life and been fine, but it feels like the system wants to just let him go and not help them. Then they're there to make another bad choice and they get another, you know, crime against them. And again, the, you know, the last time he was arrested just a week or so ago, four felonies right off, right, released right away. It's like they want to build a giant thing to make them where they can't get back out, or they're completely dependent on the system.
Yeah, that's, it's really a bad situation. Well, I've got your contact information. So, Jenna, if there are some people out there either who work for agencies or in the public who have something constructive to offer to you, I'll be glad to send it on to you.
Thank you.
Ms. Brill, thank you very much. That's Jenna Brill, very frustrated, a mother whose son appears headed toward drugs, violence, and maybe worse things down the road, and perhaps a threat to the general public. And yet the system, for all the money that you pay to support police and courts and cops and DAs and mental health and everything else, the system doesn't seem aimed at doing one constructive thing. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. And is the Supreme Court backing Joe Biden's ghost gun crackdown? And is that a direct hit on the Second Amendment? We'll get into that as well. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
Simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And for some reason that I can't understand, Republicans, especially those in the U.S. Senate, are not getting busy with passing and making permanent the tax cuts that Donald Trump both sponsored and then signed into law back in 2017. Instead, they're kind of, slow walking this thing. And I don't understand the whys and wherefores of that. But what other changes should Congress make to keep us ahead of China and the EU? Grover Norquist joins me now, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Hey, Grover, welcome back to the program.
Absolutely. Good to be with you. And both the House and the Senate have posted that they're going to be speeding this up, and it's going to be done a lot sooner than people thought. So this
a lot sooner than we thought. Is that any kind of timeline? You know, like because this shouldn't this have been something that happened in the first month of the new Congress?
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is the Senate just in the last day or so finished all of the appointments for whom they can have, I think, 30 hours of debate.
Yep.
And now they're moving to the ones with 20. And they put Trump's cabinet together faster than, I don't know if it's anybody in the history of the world, but anybody for a long time, in terms of getting it done quickly. So they've had all this stuff on their plate, one. Two, I've been working with the Senate leadership from the beginning, where they knew they had to get this tax bill extended, and it's the Senate insisting that it be done permanently, not just for another 10 years.
Right.
So the Senate, at the end of the day, has the tougher, better bill to start with. Now, the House has, you know, an interesting, fine piece of work. But the most important thing about the tax cut is that it be made permanent. And that's what the Senate leadership and a whole bunch of senators wrote a letter saying, just by the way, we're not doing anything that's permanent. And that has put a line in the sand that has been very, very helpful. And by the way, the House leadership agrees. Okay, this is not a fight. It's just that some in the House, it's easier if you just do it for 10 years. So between the House and the Senate and Trump, who's really letting them, you know, he said, this is what I want to do. And within the rules, let's get as much of that as we can. So they're meeting with some regularity. I talked with one of the leadership people today. And they're very happy that on the close votes in the House, we were able to get all but one guy on a tough vote. I mean, you know, because it's not perfect. And it just moves the thing forward. It's not the final bill. So it's easy for someone to say, well, I don't like this bill. Well, this isn't final bill. This is just allowing us to write the final bill. But some people want, I never had this problem, but some people want everything they do to be perfect. It's cheerful, and it's more cheerful than last week and it's last month in terms of getting a sound bill. We've got a lovely talk, if you want, about some of the choices I have to make and what it looks like. But I'm 80% sure that we'll get 80% of what we want or more.
Okay, I want to ask you about the corporate tax cut, because I know this may go over some folks' heads. I mean, it's certainly beyond my complete understanding. But when we used to have one of the worst, the world's highest corporate tax rate of 35%, that got cut to 21. And Trump's saying, take it to 15, and we're going to have a tremendous advantage across the entire world. What happened after we cut it just from 35 to 21? Wasn't that a tremendous boon to America? Not just to businesses, but to all the people they employ and the taxes they pay and everything else.
Oh, yes. The taxes that came in, because there was so much growth, so many more people hired, so many pay increases that took place across the country. On the corporate income tax alone, the government got about $100 billion more than they had expected, than they thought they were going to. Because supply side economics. If you reduce the tax on something, you get more of it because you've made it easier for people, more valuable for people to invest in the future and work in for the future. So that was one of those times where the tax cut brought you more money, not less, the corporate income tax cut. And the other one is, it was an educational thing for the American people, because people do understand it based that a tax on the local grocery store is not paid by the building. It's paid by consumers who buy things at the grocery store.
Right.
It's paid by workers who, if you come and take $1 million in taxes from the grocery store, and 70% of what the grocery store spends is wages, what are they going to do? Is wages will take 70% of the hit of $1 million. And then if you damage the company enough so that loses value, anybody who has that in their 401k or their IRA and their pension has a poorer retirement. So it comes from savers, it comes from workers, it comes from consumers. It does not come from a grocery store building or a factory. Factories don't pay taxes, people pay taxes.
Well, so if you reduce the corporate tax rate to, say, 15 from where it is now,
yes.
So it was 35, is 21 now, could be 15, and you couple that with tariffs, and I would hope that the president, he wants to have reciprocal tariffs. A lot of people may not realize, if you buy a German car in America, it pays, I think it's a 1.5% tariff when that car comes in. When our cars go into Germany, they pay a 10% tariff, and you say, so they charge us 10% and we charge them 1.5%. Why don't we make it equal? In fact, why don't we make it zero going both directions and let people just buy the cars they want to buy? If we couple the tariffs and the effect they're going to have with a much lower corporate tax rate than the rest of the world, then don't we end up with America being in a dominant position to be the producer and the employer in America and bring those jobs back, the ones that Obama famously said, what's Trump going to do, wave a magic wand? Well, it seems his magic wand has been working pretty well. If we do these changes, aren't we likely to get back a whole bunch of those jobs and a whole bunch of that manufacturing?
We saw that happen in 2017, 2018, as we passed the Republican tax cut that reduced marginal tax rates for companies. We do that again, we'll see more growth. There used to be those things called inversions. For some of your younger audience members, they may not know what an inversion is, but that's when a company in the United States gets bought by, say, a Canadian company. Because
Tim Horton.
Even though,
right?
Even though it's the same buildings, it's the same product, same service, but by being located in Canada or Switzerland or Britain, it paid less taxes than if it was an American company. And so companies actually, they made it sound like they were leaving the country and being unpatriotic. What happened is they got bought by foreign companies because they realized, if I buy this, it's worth more than if the guys who own it. And so those were diversions. They changed where they were headquartered. There hasn't been, during the Trump years, there wasn't a single inversion because of the lower corporate tax. It didn't pay to move your company headquarters to another country.
Well, and frankly, I don't blame those companies for doing it. And I know that some Americans say, oh, no, you're being disloyal. No, no more disloyal than the mom in, say, New York City or New York State who drives over to New Jersey to do her back-to-school clothes shopping. Why? Because the sales tax rate is lower. You say, are you being disloyal to New York? No, I'm getting a deal on my kids' back-to-school clothes, and everybody completely understands that. Or when you say, yeah, if you're going to buy booze, buy it in one of those two states where the booze tax is low, and then take it back to the state where you actually live. There's no disloyalty in that at all. Grover, I hope the Senate gets this put together. We need to make those tax cuts permanent, and America should become the friendliest place on earth for businesses to do business, and I think Donald Trump is bringing that about. Back in a moment. Your calls are welcome. 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Just think of him as your concealed carry. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And this segment of the show is brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. Find it at NickShivers.com. And our ex-poll question today, should President Trump freeze all federal funds to America's largest provider of abortions? That would be Planned Parenthood. The Health and Human Services Department, and this will be interesting, because Trump is pro-life. Life. And yet HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is very much pro-abortion. But they are looking at an immediate freeze on more than $27 million in grants. The groups that would be subject to the freeze include Planned Parenthood affiliates. And that will be interesting. Donald Trump's position being transmitted by a pro-abortion type like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Should he freeze all funds to the largest abortion provider in America? I would argue yes. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's go to Jamie. Hey, Jamie, welcome to the program. You heard that conversation I had with the mom who's very frustrated. She knows her kid has committed crimes. She knows he's involved in drugs to some extent. He may be involved in human trafficking. And she says she can't get the police to take him into custody and hold on to him. What would you do with that?
Well, I'm definitely not a psychiatrist or anything, but it doesn't seem like he was in trouble up until he graduated at all. I'm just concerned with what his problem was within the National Guard. I mean, there's always hazing. There's always sexual abuse. There's always something going on in some...
Always?
In those types of... Well, you know, you hear about...
I mean, there's some hazing, but the sexual abuse... I don't know if I want to condemn the National Guard the way you are, but it's your... Well, you know, it's your comment. You can say what you want. But are you sure we should tag it to the National Guard, or could it be something else entirely?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, he came along something somewhere. Out of the house, so away from home, and the last place he was the National Guard, which made him go AWOL. So I would fight to say, you know, what did he get a hold of? Did somebody introduce him to something, to drugs, to this or that? What did he see? I mean,
he apparently went through basic just fine and was on his way to do some training in Louisiana, but he'd already been through the initial part of National Guard, and he didn't come home and say, Mom, I need to resign, you know, from the National Guard. I want out. He said, I'm going off to do some training. And then he went to Louisiana,
right.
Or we think he went to Louisiana, and then he went AWOL.
Right.
So do we necessarily blame that on the National Guard immediately? Because usually people are the product of the folks they hang out with, aren't they?
True, but it sounds like he was a great student and he did all these things, after, you know, graduated, and then you know, apparently didn't want to be there. I don't know how comfortable he was talking to his mom if something happened to him.
Yeah, you know, I just wonder.
Like she definitely wants him to be held accountable, which is great. I would do the exact same thing for my kids.
Except that what happens when you want your kid held accountable, but the system that is supposed to do that, the police, the DA, the courts, and the jails and or correction system say, yeah, we're not going to do much with him, even after he does, you know, crime after crime after crime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I see that as the biggest problem, not figuring out who to blame.
Yeah. I don't know if she's seen him since he went AWOL, you know?
Nope. She says he took off to go to some training they were doing in Louisiana, and then he never showed up. He went AWOL, and the next thing she heard about him, he's being chased through the city of Gresham by drones and dogs and planes and cops, and they finally catch him. He's got the firearm in his possession. He's accused of armed robbery, and then the victim says, I'm not going to take part in the prosecution, and they drop all the charges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something wrong with that. I don't know why they wouldn't do that. I'm just thinking that maybe, you know, I don't understand why maybe the National Guard wouldn't come forth and also help. I mean, when somebody goes AWOL, they're kind of responsible for him.
Well, I would think if you've gone AWOL and you've in other words, violated the UCMJ, you would think the National Guard would say you have to do something. But as far as helping in any other way, I don't know. But, Jamie, thank you for the call. Let's go to Ricky. Hey, Ricky, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network and KMED, home of Bill Meyer. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Lars. Hey, I heard that mom talking about her son. And I'm down here in Southern Oregon, and I've been on the right path for about over 13 years now.
Congrats.
And, thank you. And the thing is, I feel like there's like the lady that you just spoke to, there's some correlation in that with stigma of not being able to talk about things that are going on. I grew up in a household where things were tough. You didn't cry, you didn't whine, you didn't complain about anything. And I feel like there is still a stigma to where some people, and I came from a good home, good people, good things, just like that man that's going through some issues. Like, I felt like I couldn't face my parents or the people that love me after I started that path. And I just, at the same time, you know, I went AWOL too. I just disappeared for a little while. And it's, I feel like people don't realize how much they can actually accomplish just by being able to talk about some things. And,
I'd agree with that. Although, Ricky, doesn't it seem like these days people almost overshare about their problems? Because we hear about everybody's problems all the time, and you say, it's a society where it's tough to talk about your problems. Everybody on the planet talk. I'm a victim of this. I'm a victim of that. You know, and I don't know. Now, maybe within your family, it's like dad says, no, we don't cry in this family and we don't talk about our problems. Yeah. And I get that problem. But, Ricky, I'm glad you found the way back to the straight and narrow. It's Wednesday and it's the Radio Northwest.
The Lord's Lord.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails, and we'll do that in just a moment. But I want to talk about carbon taxes. It's one of the things that I hope the states, even the blue states, are going to start giving up as they see that the Green New scam is not going anywhere, not at the federal level. The money is drying up at the federal level, and it seems that even some private companies have decided this is not the way for America to go. But let's get Todd Myers on, who's Vice President for Research at the Washington Policy Center. Hey, Todd, welcome back.
Hey, always nice to chat with you.
Tell me about what's happening in Canada with a similar carbon tax to the one that Washington State adopted under Inslee, Governor Inslee.
Yeah, so Canada's system is a little bit different. They have a flat carbon tax as opposed to a variable one, which Washington has. It's based on an auction, but they function the exact same way, and the differences between them are more sort of academic and pedantic than real. And you will not be surprised that Canada has called a snap election for April, and the party in power has decided to remove the carbon tax. Their carbon tax, their federal carbon tax, is about 70 cents a gallon, or about 18 to 19 cents a liter. So, I mean, it's very expensive. So April 1st, next week, they will be removing that federal carbon tax. And obviously the goal, I think, is that they recognize that it's unpopular. And so the party in power, the Liberal Party, they call themselves the Liberal Party, is trying to, you know, gain votes going into an election.
Yeah, because I guess until Donald Trump started some of the tariff stuff with Canada, it sounded like Pierre Poilievre was the odds-on favorite to become the new prime minister. And now, maybe not so much, but one of his favorite hobby horses, and I think he was right to target it, was the fact that the carbon tax had made life unaffordable for the average Canadian.
That's right. And in fact, we saw Doug Ford, who became the premier of Ontario, remove a cap and trade system very much like Washington State's when he first took office. So they have had various types of taxes on CO2 emissions, and bit by bit they remove them. But what I think is interesting to me is that when we had the campaign in Washington State last year to remove our CO2 tax, the Seattle Chamber of Commerce, the head of the Seattle Chamber of Commerce, Rachel Smith, said that even if that tax was removed, gas prices wouldn't necessarily go down. Now, I thought that that was a fairly absurd thing to say for anybody who understands economics, but a particularly absurd thing for somebody who is the head of a chamber of commerce to say. So I offered to bet her during the campaign that if it was repealed, prices would go down. Now, she refused to bet, and unfortunately it wasn't repealed. But I have opened up that bet again because Canada is removing its carbon tax, and my bet is that we will see gas prices at the pump go down. So if she would like to bet and stand by her claim, I am all ready.
Well, it just seems like somebody who doesn't know anything about economics to say if a tax paid by the people who provide gasoline and diesel goes down, that the gas, you know, the companies involved in selling fuel are not going to drop the prices. And they say, oh, no, they're all greedy. I said, if they're greedy without any kind of connection to the marketplace, why don't they make gasoline $10 a gallon? If they think they could get people to pay 10 bucks a gallon, they'd make a ton of money. In fact, they'd make more. I think the state of Washington still makes more money on a gallon of gas than the average oil company makes on a gallon of gas, at least in percentage terms. So, well, you know, why wouldn't they do that? And yet when prices go, when taxes go up, the price of fuel goes up. Why is it that people like this Ms. Smith are insisting that, no, but if taxes go down, the price of fuel will not go down? Does she explain her logic on that at all?
She just says, well, it's not like a gas tax. But, of course, that's nonsense. And we know it functions exactly like a gas tax, which is it is charged at the gas distributor, which is where gas taxes ultimately are. So it functions in very much the same way. It was just a situation where there are a certain number of businesses who profit from, you know, government programs. And she was speaking for those government programs, and she was willing to say things that were absurd. You know, this is not new in politics, I understand, but you would expect people to say things that at least have a modicum of plausibility. And you would expect the head of a chamber of commerce not to speak against her members' own interests in other ways to claim that taxes don't impact the cost of providing goods. They clearly do. And the irony is that now the Chamber of Commerce is very worried about the massive tax increases that have been proposed in the legislature. So, you know, last year she was very blasé about tax increases, and this year all of a sudden when it hits her members directly, she suddenly realizes that those arguments aren't going to make it.
Well, go ahead.
It's a very frustrating situation, but again, I think that the way that we have to deal with this is hold people accountable and show them again and again that they're wrong, and the change of policy in Canada is an opportunity to do that.
I guess the only thing I could think of that might have Rachel Smith saying this is, yeah, that she has companies who are members of the Chamber of Commerce who would get hit. But guess what happens when Olympia gets a couple of billion extra dollars from a carbon tax that they never expected to collect and that they're collecting illegally on farmers and all that? Well, Olympia spends it. And they may spend it with some companies that do a lot of business. So I would imagine that some of our members are praying for the carbon tax to stay in place, and others are wishing it would go away.
That's exactly right. But, you know, I think you can make an argument for exactly what you just said. You could say, look, I understand that there is a cost, but overall the benefit is greater. People make those sorts of arguments all the time. You don't have to resort to making absurd claims like cutting carbon taxes doesn't cut prices. And I think that's the frustrating thing is that it is hard to make arguments and have discussions about good policy when people don't pay a price for making arguments that are absurd.
Are you seeing any other consequences to the Trump administration saying we're ending the Green New Deal and we're going to stop sending out all these subsidies and bonuses and grants that were sent out during Biden?
Yeah, I think you are starting to see it. The irony, of course, is that the Biden administration's implementation of the Green New Deal was so incompetent, you weren't seeing much anyway because they had billions of dollars. And as you saw, just in the example of car chargers, only installed, you know, a couple of dozen. So I think that limited the impact of removing it. But there's no doubt I see lots of people very worried about the impact of pulling that money back. It's a very good thing. I'm glad we're doing it because a lot of it is just pure waste.
Well, and they may be saving a lot of communities. Which community is it? Is it Edmonds that bought a whole bunch of electric buses because they were the cool thing to own, and now they're surplusing them and ditching them because the company that they bought them from made something that doesn't run right, so they're having to go back to diesel because electric doesn't work? I'm hoping that a bunch of cities that had applied for those grants and didn't get them are now saying, well, we dodged a bullet on that one. That's Todd Myers, who's VP of Research at the Washington Policy Center. Back in a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and emails and talk about whether or not it's right for Donald Trump to use federal resources to help states ensure fair and honest elections. That's coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network. If you're tired of this cold, wet winter weather, just think how your asphalt is doing outside. The winter weather takes its toll, and now's never been a better time to get on the list with my friends at Signature Paving. Hey, it's Lars, and I know what you're probably thinking. I'll just wait till springtime when the weather gets nicer. Wrong. At that point, it may be too late to get on the Signature schedule. Whether you need paving, curbing, patching, sealing, or striping, Mike and his team at Signature Paving, they'll get you taken care of. And don't just take my word for it. Take their reviews from customers. One says, there isn't anyone better. I would always recommend you. And why? Because when you've been paving for more than 25 years with so many happy customers, it's no wonder once the summer months roll around, there might be just a bit of a wait. Don't delay. Get on the Signature schedule now. Give them a call today or visit them online at signaturepavingservices.com. Signature Paving. Their name is your guarantee. CCB 135-293.
Saying the things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. So about 24 hours ago, Donald Trump signed an executive order. And I realized that he signed dozens and dozens of them. And I think one of the reasons his public approval ratings are higher than they have ever been before in the history of Donald Trump being in office. And the Democrats are lower than they've ever been in the history of the entire Democrat Party. He signs this executive order, and what he asked for was he wants to ensure election integrity. And what he's asked is that the Election Assistance Commission take appropriate action to require documentary proof of U.S. citizenship. Now, that sounds kind of fancy. It basically comes down to a passport or a birth certificate and picture ID. Illegal aliens don't have that. Most Americans do. Now, are there probably a few examples of people out there who have no driver's license, no birth certificate, no passport, and no way to prove that they are American citizens. I have a feeling there might be a few of those cases. They're going to be few and far between. But do I think that most people could prove that they are legally in the United States? I absolutely think that's the case. And guess what's happening now? You've got states, the blue states around America, who are all running around saying, well, we're going to fight this in court. You're going to fight the idea of asking people to prove that they're an American citizen before they're allowed to vote? How much sense does that make? Anyway, we'll get into some of the details of yesterday's election assistance and election confirmation executive order. But first, let me go to Sid, first of all. Hey, Sid, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Hey, well, Sid.
We're trying to figure out, thank you, Lars. On television, there's a guy that apparently is talking about Social Security for a lot of people, and it wasn't very easy to understand, but there's something going on about Social Security, and I just wondered if there's anyone that you know of.
No, we talked about it last week, and Sid, there are a lot of pieces to it, but here's the most important part. Social Security is being told by the president, we want you to confirm that everybody on Social Security is actually entitled to Social Security, so they want to reconfirm who you are. Now, you can do that electronically. You can do it through a desktop computer. I think you can even do it through a pad device or a phone. Or, lacking all of those things, you can actually go down to the Social Security office and confirm you are a real Social Security recipient. Because I understand that people may have misinterpreted the claim that there are 150-year-olds who are collecting Social Security. I think what the Doge crew was merely pointing out is that Social Security has a whole bunch of people on its rolls who are listed as being 150 years old. Whether they're getting a check or not should be determined. And if they are, if somebody's getting a check claiming they're 150 years old, that should stop. But even if there's nobody getting it, you might ask reasonably, why does Social Security have people on its rolls who had to have been born before Social Security was created back in 1934? I mean, that's a reasonable question. And is it reasonable to say to everybody on Social Security, we need to confirm that you are, in fact, a real Social Security recipient? Does that sound reasonable?
No.
No? Because it doesn't?
I'm not computer literate. I mean, it sounds like if we don't do what they say, more government controls, if we don't become computer literate and learn how to work our computers, we may be cut off from Social Security.
Well, Sid, you left out the second part. I said, lacking a computer, you can simply walk into the Social Security office in your community and just present proof. Here's who I am. Here's my picture ID. And I'm a legitimate Social Security recipient. Here's my SSN number, and you're confirmed. So you don't have to be computer literate unless you want to focus on that and say that you're not capable of it and you don't have any kids or grandkids who are capable of it. And do you live on your own? Sid?
Yes.
Okay, you live on your own. Do you ever leave the house?
Yes.
Could you go by the Social Security office and say, hi, I'm Sid. Here's my number. I want to confirm that I'm a real recipient. What would keep you from doing that?
I could do that.
Okay. Well, there you go. Problem solved, right?
Well, it depends on if how long the line is.
Well, there's that too. But all of us stand in lines, don't we, Sid? Some of them are longer, some of them are shorter. Do you have any kids or grandkids who know their way around a computer or a pad device?
Yes.
And would they be willing to help Granddad?
Maybe.
Well, you can always ask. I mean, they yeah, and then you can write them in or out of the will, depending. Let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
This whole thing about voter ID, there's only one reason to not have voter ID laws, and that's for fraud. And you know what? You have the right to vote in this country, and if you want to execute that right to vote, then go get yourself an ID. It shouldn't be incumbent upon anyone else to get you an ID except you if you want to vote. And if you don't want to vote, then don't have an ID, but the rest is just nonsense. Go figure it out.
Well, Jeff, you don't have the proper Democrat Party point of view. I mean, have you heard the things that the Democrat Party says about their fellow Americans? They say black Americans find it impossible to get a driver's license. They actually think that's true. Now, I know plenty of black people. All of them have driver's licenses. I've never run. In fact, Joe Biden was so crazy, he literally said during his time in office, he said, well, you know, black people who are in business, they'd be able to do better if they knew how to hire an accountant or an attorney. But they don't know how to do that. I mean, that's the point of view of the party of slavery. They've never left behind their roots in slavery. They have a very dim view of anybody with dark skin.
Soft bigotry of low expectations, Lars.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's unbelievable that these people are for the minorities, and they can't even, they're the ones that run the education in our country, and they can't even teach somebody how to go get a driver's license. Well, then no wonder they can't do anything else for themselves. You know what I mean?
Do you really think, Jeff, that there's anybody who could get through life? There may have been somebody who was born in a shack 100 years ago, and they're now 99 years old, who never had a driver's license, who never got a birth certificate, but then I ask, well, how did they sign up for Social Security? If they're 99, they're on Social Security. Oh, well, you know, they don't have an answer for that. You say, well, they just always work. Well, they work for cash. They never had a checking account. They never had a bank account. They never cashed a paycheck. They never had to do any transaction that involved showing picture ID. I mean, that's what the Democrat Party wants you to believe.
A library book, attended a Democrat convention or anything like that. If that's your situation, then too bad. I guess you can't go see Ron Wyden next time he comes to a town hall meeting, and you know, wherever you live. You know,
have you ever during the conventions last year, you know, including the Democrat convention, where they didn't actually have the delegates vote on any candidates, and they didn't have any American citizens vote on Kamala Harris, and yet the convention picked her. Did you see the kind of ID you needed to get in and out of the Democrat Party convention?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I can only imagine.
Oh, I mean, it's crazy. There were reporters who said, these are all the credentials you need to walk into the Democrat Party convention. And this is the same party that says, black people, those people don't know how to get a driver's license. Why? You know, they have to have our help to make their way through life, which is an entirely disgusting point of view on the part of the Democrat Party. Back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson
Show. The Lars Larson Show. Now. Keeping you happy, informed, and always guessing what he'll say next, here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I've been in the broadcast business for a long, long time, and I can tell you that one of the things that's irritated me for decades is that while every employer I've ever worked for actually pays me a salary out of money they get through ordinary commerce, they sell advertising, whether it was television or radio, no matter where I worked, I was earning a paycheck from actually selling a product or a service. Not so the people in state-controlled media at NPR and PBS. NPR and PBS are beneficiaries of about $500 million that goes to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting each and every year from the taxpayers' pockets. And it's always irritated me that the rest of us have to actually work for companies that make their own money. PBS and NPR either beg for donations, and that's irritating to begin with, but they also get a bunch of money from the taxpayers. Well, they were up on Capitol Hill today, and one of the people who testified in that hearing about whether or not the taxpayers should continue to fund left-wing NPR and PBS is Mike Gonzalez, who's a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation and the author most recently of Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, it was a bit of a doozy, 2.5 hours testifying.
Well, and tell me this. Is there any sensible reason why America should have state-controlled, state-financed media? Because back in the day, I used to identify TASS, and I'm trying to, Xinhua, I think, is the one in China. You say, oh, Those are the government-controlled media. They're paid for by the government, they're controlled by the government, and they sing the government's praises all day long. That's a hallmark of a communist society. Is there any reason for America to support communist broadcasting at NPR and PBS?
Absolutely not. There are many reasons, and I gave them all today to the subcommittee. One is that it's unfair to people like you. It's unfair to private sector competitors. Another one is that it's a regressive tax. It's a it takes money from hardworking families and gives them to the affluent, because the audience at NPR and PBS is very affluent. It's very bicoastal. It's very college accredited. Another one is that it's with the advent of so many competitors, so many online content and education, there really is no. The original reason that Johnson had in the late 60s was educational TV. This is not a serious case to make anymore. But the ultimate reason, it's biased. They're very biased. We conservatives have been saying for 50 years, ever since it was created, that their content is biased towards the left. And what I said to the committee today was very basic. This is a relationship in which Democrats unanimously give appropriate money in Congress for public media, and then public media turns around and returns the favor by heavily tipping the balance in favor of Democrats.
Yep.
So they'll say, no, support is bipartisan. No, it isn't. You have maybe three members of the House and three members of the Senate who are charmed by the lobbyists. They're given trophies, they're given awards every year, but it's less than a handful in the House and less than a handful in the Senate of Republicans. This is a Democrat public media love affair. It's a collusion. It's completely unfair. It shouldn't exist.
Well, and there's no need, especially in a government that is overspent by almost $2 trillion a year. The federal government takes in $4 trillion. They spend $6 trillion. You say, well, we're overspent. And I realize the contribution to public broadcasting is only $500 million. But for most of us, that's a gigantic sum of money to be given by a government that is functionally bankrupt and overspending. It seems like a great place to cut. So, What did they have to say in defense of the idea that they should continue to get this generous public subsidy?
That's a great question. And it used to be that it was, no, it's educational TV. It's for the children, right? That's the last refuge of the scoundrel. They no longer say that so much anymore. They use it a little bit. But it's down to two other arguments, because they kind of, they sold Sesame Street to HBO. And then a lot of educational content has come online. So now their argument is, well, without the taxpayer, you no longer have local coverage. Local news disappears. It's the only, the taxpayer is the last business model left to local coverage. And the second one is even more specious, is to say, well, without local broadcasting, there's not going to be any warning service available for in weather emergencies.
You mean the EBS or EAS system, that's the emergency broadcast? But that's done by all the commercial broadcasters.
They mean that NPR will tell you in Alaska if the lake is frozen. This is complete BS. Complete BS. And what it is, it's what I described it as. It's a hostage-taking situation. Basically, is you give us money or people will die, and it's just a substitute. They'll use any excuse now, and so what I say to them, and what I'm going to write tomorrow in my weekly column, is okay, fine. You know what? Let's call their bluff. Let's reduce the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, to just that service. Let's have weather emergency alerts in Alaska and Wisconsin. And if this is really your concern, let's reduce it to that, and let's cut out all the other nonsense, Morning Edition, the News Hour, the ironically named All Things Considered, all these things, let's get rid of them. Let's not pay for that anymore.
And by the way, Mike, one of the things that came up today, I don't know if you saw the testimony of Catherine Mayer, who's the chief executive of NPR. But she walked in and she got some tough questions about why didn't you cover the Hunter Biden laptop scandal? Probably one of the most consequential breaking news situations involving the computer owned by Hunter Biden that implicated Hunter Biden and his father, Joe Biden, in all this criminal activity. And she said, well, you're right. I have to say NPR acknowledges we failed to cover the Hunter Biden laptop scandal more aggressively or sooner. I mean, the leftward tilt was open bias, saying we're not going to do a story if it makes the Bidens look bad.
And in fact, a Yuri Berliner, an editor, veteran of NPR for 25 years, who wrote a whistleblowing piece in the Free Press last year, he said that. He said he heard editors say around the table, it's a good thing we didn't cover that too, because it could have helped the Donald Trump campaign. And we know from polling that people said, yeah, that would have made me change my vote. It would have changed enough votes. So what she said, and this is new, this is a new admission by them, that yes, they made a mistake. I was interviewed by NPR, on the media, this year actually, 2 months ago, and they were still defending that. So, and that was Brooke Gladstone, who she interviewed me for an hour. So she was still defending not covering the laptop story. So now this is a new thing being tried out by Catherine Marr. She did very, very badly, Lars. I wouldn't be surprised if she's gone soon. But that's not going to change anything at NPR, by the way. That won't change a thing. But I wouldn't be surprised if she's gone, because it was just an extremely bad hearing for her.
Well, and at this point, it'd be an easy $500 million saved for American taxpayers, and I'm sure they can find another place to spend $500 million in a way that better benefits the American public. That's Mike Gonzalez. He's the author most recently of Next Gen Marxism, What It Is and How to Combat It. Mike, thanks very much. I appreciate the time. Back in a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you have a moment, vote in our X poll. You'll find the question every day: should President Trump freeze all federal funds to America's largest abortion provider, Planned Parenthood? We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.